Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease. Welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. Today, I am joined by Jonathan Russell, and as the episode goes on, we will all learn how special he is to our Mito Action community. Now, ever since I've been involved in the organization, I've heard about Derby Day, and it's a really big part of the Mito Action story, but I have not gone to the event myself. Traveling's tough, so I have to limit that, and I have young kids, and there's a multitude of reasons that I have not gone myself, but I know how important this event is. And I am really excited that another Derby Day is going to happen in the next couple weeks. And so Jonathan is here to teach us about the event and to tell us why it is so important and what happens at the event. So Jonathan, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, let's just get right into it and tell us how you became involved with Mito Action. What brought you to this cause?
Sure. So first off, yeah, thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it. And talking about Derby Day, which is a fun event.
I think it's long overdue. We should teach everyone what it's all about.
Sure. Yeah, no, I'm glad. I'm glad to be able to be speaking about it here. I got involved with Mito Action back in 2006, 5-6, somewhere around there. So it was a number of years ago. That was the year that my mother, Sandra, was diagnosed with mitochondrial disease. She had MELOS. And when it first came about, and I think we were just kind of chatting about this, no one really knew what the heck was going on. It was confusing. You know, she was trying to figure out what the heck was, happening to her. The way she was, speaking changed, her thought process kind of changed. And we were all trying to figure out, we were talking about this as well. We live in Boston. We had some great doctors that we were able to go to between, Mass General and Brigham and Women. We figured out what was going on, and it was this mitochondrial disease. And we found Mito Action that way to be a support and educational resource. And so we got linked with Mito Action via my mother, via that episode back in, 05, 06, 07.
So she was diagnosed with it as an adult?
Correct. Yeah, she was 48, 49.
Okay.
Which I know is rare. And it was one of the things that honestly tripped her up, was like, wow, I'm diagnosed with it now, but my goodness, it mostly affects children, which is just so heartbreaking.
And she didn't have any obstacles as a child or anything like that? That's wild.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. We obviously took, hindsight looking back and trying to figure out, were there things going on that we just didn't pick up on? Mm-hmm. But nothing glaring for sure. It was mostly, funny enough, like she would, if she went out and had a couple of drinks with friends, hangovers would affect her tremendously. So she'd be in bed all day and not being able to recover. And it took her a long time to get, things like that, which was the only thing that we could pick up on that, potentially was just seemed irregular.
So how long from the time that you really started seeking out help to when she was diagnosed?
God, I don't think it was terribly long because it affected her pretty dramatically.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it came on really fast?
It came on pretty fast.
Wow. Yeah. How scary.
Yeah, it was pretty alarming. I mean, it was scary for her, for sure.
Yeah. Did they think at first maybe she had a stroke or?
So she had a series of seizures, strokes, and that was, I think the first one was in the fall of 05 maybe. And that was the first one. It was kind of, it came on. She was going to get her hearing aid or not her hearing aid, but just hearing tested.
Yeah.
And she ended up having, a seizure at the hospital.
Oh my gosh.
So my goodness. So it was almost good in
a
that
blessing.
Way.
Yeah,
exactly. A blessing. So yeah, that happened back in 05. And then, you know, there were a series of smaller seizures. Then she was on a kind of a course of different vitamins and, you know, different, you know, medicines that way that were kind of stabilizing her for a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
She'd have little series and little strokes and little episodes throughout that time. But it came on pretty suddenly. I mean, she really only had it for, you know, 3 or 4 years really before she passed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. So had you ever heard of mitochondrial disease before your mom's diagnosis?
Never.
Yeah.
Never. Yeah.
And are there concerns of it running in your family, the mutation?
There are. So from what I, you know, understand, it's passed down through women. So it, you know, my brother and I, you know, continuously go in like annually and we get tested and, you know, see what could be going on, if anything's going on, but nothing's really affected us yet. My brother's approaching 40, I'm 35. And so, you know, you kind of just go in and get checked up on and you know, what we've been doing is stay close to the MitoAction community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, stay informed.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. What a story.
Story, crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you met others who had adult onset MELAS?
I have not that I think of. No.
Mm-hmm. That's what's so interesting. Like my mom had a really, really significant case, severe case of CPO plus. And my neurologist always tries to talk to me about how that doesn't necessarily mean mine is going to be just like that. And it's hard to believe it, you know, but it all presents so differently. And I think your mom's case is a really prime example of that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's kind of what you're up against is you just don't know what the future holds and is mine going to be like hers or is it going to, you know, it's just kind of this unknown.
Right.
So,
well, thank you for staying involved even after she is gone. I'm so sorry she is gone. I'm sure that's really difficult. I mean, you're so young to, you know, not have your mom. People tell me that as well. So, I guess let's talk about Derby Day. Can you paint us a picture of the event?
Definitely.
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah, Derby Day is a great event. So I can I'll give you a little bit of background if that helps.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a little bit of background. Growing up, my mother really spearheaded it. Was this Derby party that we had every year, and my family's not really. It's funny. It's like my family's not from Kentucky. We're not particularly into horses. You know, we don't really, you know, the Kentucky Derby is a thing, obviously, but it wasn't like this paramount thing in our lives. But my mother just insisted on having this Kentucky Derby party. She loved having people over. It was funny. She's always described, you know, by her friends as having like a lot of energy, which is so funny because, you know,
very ironic.
Very ironic. Yep. And so she had this Derby event every year and it coincided with the Kentucky Derby is on the first Saturday of May every year. My mother's birthday is May 5th. And then Mother's Day is right around the corner there as well. And so she used to have this Kentucky Derby party because it would kind of blend into all of those events. And she could have, you know, all of her friends, family over and have a fun time kind of around her birthday, but based it on the Kentucky Derby. And so we used to have this big Kentucky Derby party every year, making mint juleps. And everyone was dressing up as if they were going to the Kentucky Derby. And we had hat contests and bow tie contests.
Yeah.
And it was just a ton of fun. It was a great time. So that's how the Derby party really, I guess, if you go back, that's how it started. And then she passed away in 2008. And my father and my uncle were both became members of the MitoAction board.
Okay.
And we were thinking of ways to kind of honor my mother and create some sort of event or fundraising or what could it be that we could do to help raise money for MitoAction.
Mm-hmm.
And we came up with this Derby party. And so I think it started 2010, because this is the 15th annual. And so 2010 was the first Sandra K. Russell Derby Day benefit.
Got it.
And so that's the origin of it. And then it's been going on for 15 years now.
I never knew that story. Okay.
Yeah.
I was really looking forward to this episode to really learn a lot about the event for myself and for our community. So I'm really very much enjoying hearing about it. So someone attends, you know, let's say one of your friends comes to support you and your family. What do they do at the party? What is it like? Where is it at?
Yeah. So it's been held at different venues all across Boston. So I think we held it first at the Liberty Hotel, which is a really cool hotel in downtown Boston. And then it's been held at various locations ever since.
Mm-hmm.
For the past couple of years, we've held it at the Encore Hotel and Casino, which is a newer hotel and casino in Boston. And they have a room called Memoir, which actually turns into a nightclub, but it's a great venue for hosting a Kentucky Derby party because they have a massive TV screen, which we turn on and we have the Kentucky Derby playing and all of that. But yeah, I've been grateful and really thankful too. I have a lot of friends in Boston in the community that have come and supported the event over the years. And really, you know, when they get there, everyone's dressed up like they're going to the Kentucky Derby. So lots of blazers, bow ties, hats, all of that. And people can go crazy or, you know, just wear a normal suit or something like that. And when they get there, there's a lot of, there's obviously an open bar. So there's, you know, there's drinks, there's mint juleps, things like that. There's we do the hat and the bow tie contest. There's the silent and live auction. So we have great either sports memorabilia or we have trips, different experiences that you can bid on in the silent and live auction. We do a few speeches throughout the night. And so we honor, you know, someone involved in the MITO community that's been a big part of the MITO community over the past year. So we honor them. And then Paul, who I know wasn't able to join today, but he does a great speech honoring his son, Matthew. And so we raise money for the Matthew Hardy Camper Fund.
What's your part in planning this event? It sounds like a lot.
It is a lot. Yeah, it is a lot. I guess the best way I can describe it is we have this MITO Action does a ton. And so there's an event coordinator there. This year, it's her name is Markia. She does a phenomenal job. And it's not easy. And she has to deal with us as a group, which I'm a member of the committee that puts it on. And I think there's maybe 7 or 8 members there. My brother's involved, my sister-in-law, my cousin, and then just a few great, you know, old friends that commit their time to kind of helping to shape the event.
Mm-hmm.
And so we meet up on calls every week. And then we try to, you know, bring something new to the table, whether it's finding a sponsor for, you know, the bourbon and the alcohol sponsors, mm-hmm. or if we find sponsors for, you know, just for the event in general, trying to raise money there. We have to bring in all the silent and live auction items. So we're reaching out to the community within our friends and saying, you know, you're a member of this golf, you know, course, can you donate around there? Or you have a connection to this specific item, would you be able to donate that? And so we spend a lot of time just doing that and kind of building up the event to be something special every year.
Wow. It's so much work goes into an event like this.
It's crazy.
I really, really appreciate the time and energy you give to it and your whole family. So when you, your brother, your cousin, your dad, when you all walk in, is it an emotional day for you?
Definitely an emotional day. You know, it's you think back to those, you know, smaller, just little derby events we used to do at our house. And yeah, you think of like where it's come from since there. And then it's honestly, it's so chaotic during the event. So it's such a buildup over like months of like trying to get auction items. And there's a lot of, there's even like some tensions over the call. It's like, did you get that person? Are they coming? Well, you know, when you're trying to build this up and there's some nervousness about who's going to actually show up and are there going to be enough people? Every year it seems to work out, but it's so chaotic during the event that I barely see anybody. I'm involved with emceeing it with Paul. And so we have a ton of fun doing that as well. But really, I see like Paul and Kyra and a few friends during the event, and then it ends and it feels like
it's a blur.
It's like a blur and then a weight lifted. And then once it's over, it's like you're spending all the time with all the people who raise their paddles to donate and do all this stuff. So it's a great event. It's a lot of fun.
About how many people attended last year, do you think?
I think we always range, it's a broad range between like 200 to 300 people. So on the lower end, it's 200, but we try to get in right around that 250 people.
Okay.
Yeah. It's great. It's the room gets filled up and, you know, it's a lot of fun.
And do you find that you're raising more money year after year?
Yeah, I would say it's been pretty good over the last couple years. You know, 2020 kind of threw a curveball at us.
Yeah.
We tried to do it virtually, so that was a little bit of a dip there, but we were still able to do it. And it was actually people, again, you know, turned up. They had little pockets of derby parties themselves, so four or five people, and that would all almost like zoom into the event. And so we were able
to found
it off.
A way to make things work, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That was like the year of 2020 craziness. But yeah, every year has been great. I think we've raised over 1.8 million since the event started.
In the 14 years that it's happened. Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's been pretty good.
I'm so impressed. I mean, this, as I said at the beginning, it's a big part of our story. You know, there's so much that goes into the programs and everything that happens in Mito Action all year, you know, and the money has to come from somewhere. So an event like this is really helpful. Now, a portion of the money goes to the Matthew Hardy Camper Fund, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Would you be able to talk about that for a minute to our listeners?
Yeah, I can talk about that. I can at least talk about it from my perspective.
Okay, that would be great. So Paul, just to catch everyone up, Paul, we wanted him to be part of this episode, but we weren't able to get him on before the event happened. So it seemed like this podcast needed to air before the event happened to promote it. So yeah, if you could just talk about that scholarship fund, that would be great.
Yeah. So Paul's definitely going to do the best job of speaking about this for sure. But each year we raise money for the Matthew Hardy Camper Fund. It sends a kid to camp or several kids to camp that are either been affected with mitochondrial disease or really just, it's almost like getting the family, you know, almost some time. God, what year was it? I was involved in the camp that's based out in Seattle. So there's a Paul Newman Hole in the Wall Gang camp that did a Mito Week out in Seattle. And I went and was a camp counselor there for that week. And it was incredible. It was
eye-opening. I didn't know that exists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every summer they have a week for kids with mitochondrial disease?
Correct. Yeah. I think they still do it. This was a number of years ago now, but I believe they still do it. It's probably maybe 45 minutes outside Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
It's this beautiful kind of like old farm that they, you know, Paul Newman has a camp there. And yeah, every year they did a Mito Week. And so I went out there and was a camp counselor. My dad was also went. And then I think my uncle went as well, at least for 1 year. And you just get to see these kids like become kids. It's unbelievable.
It's so important for them to see other people that, you know, are going through what they're going through, you know?
Exactly. Yep. And the funny story was like, we were talking with the family that had just dropped their kid off and they said to us like, something like, we haven't spent the night in our bed by ourselves in like, since their child had been born.
Was,
11 years or something like that. And so it's just, you know, everyone gets a break
with
this camp.
Yeah.
And so, it was important for them to be able to just have a week to themselves.
It's so important. A lot of our parents really lose out on that self-care element.
Totally. Yeah. So the Matthew Hardy Camper Fund, so we raise money to send those kids to camp and I got to see it firsthand. They really enjoy their experience and get to, you know, really just act like a kid at camp for a week. And it's great.
That's awesome.
And I can tell you that definitely, I remember distinctly when my mother was diagnosed, I think we had mentioned this, before we started was, you know, one of the big things that affected her mostly was knowing that this disease affected kids.
Yeah.
And just how she couldn't, I mean, she was 48 when she was diagnosed. She wasn't terribly old.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, knowing that it affected kids was just heartbreaking to her. So being able to raise money for the Matthew Harding Camper Fund through the Derby Day event is just, I think it's a great, great thing.
I love hearing that we're supporting the kids in our community in such a specific, important way. I mean, I value camp so much for my kids, and they're not affected, at least right now. So I can only imagine how important this is for the entire family. I totally get that.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you worked so hard to make sure that exists for families. What other designations does the money go toward?
That's a good question. It really, from my understanding, it all goes back to Mito Action and supports their day-to-day initiatives.
And, yeah, okay.
That they're doing, the money that's outside that doesn't go to the Matthew Harding Camper Fund.
Got it. So, you know, someone like me who really can't get to the event, I don't live in Boston and, you know, traveling is difficult. Are there other ways that we can support and we can maybe get our friends to support the event?
Definitely. Obviously, if you have friends in Boston and then around Boston, mm-hmm. we love having people come to the event. You know, just getting someone there in person, they get to see how much fun it is, how lively it is, you know, what a great show it, you know, is put on every year. So that's number one. Number two, if you can't make it to the event or don't have, you know, people in the Boston area, there's a way to donate online and donate to the event. We're also always looking for volunteers to help out with the event. So if you know anyone who might be interested in maybe not partaking, but helping out and volunteering, it's a big undertaking to put the event on. There's a lot of decorations that go into this. There's a lot of, you know, all this sorts of stuff, the silent live auction breakdown. And so we're always looking for volunteers that can help out as well.
So I could donate to the event, but I could also possibly participate in the silent auction, or are the prizes really Boston specific?
I would say most of the attendees are Boston based, but mm-hmm. we've had, I think last year we had a trip to Fiji in the auction as an auction item. We've had
anyone could do that. You don't have to be from Boston.
Exactly. Yeah. We have different golf courses kind of around the East Coast, but really across, you know, different golf courses that people want to attend. So experiences really across the US is great. And then specific items, you know, they don't need to necessarily the items be there in person. So if you mm-hmm. have something that you want to donate to the silent or live auction, we're always open to, you know, hearing about that.
Okay. So there are a lot of ways people can get involved. They can donate, they can volunteer time. Maybe there's someone with a friend in, you know, marketing or event planning or something that could get involved. Maybe not this year, but I'm sure soon enough you'll be planning for next year's event and you'll want to continue it on. An event like this, you're probably working on it year round.
It finishes. You go home that night and then you wake up the next morning. And you're like, all right, how do we make it better? And we start game planning. We write down our notes from this past year's event. Okay, it didn't go this way. This went well. Let's not do this next year. And so it's a 24/7 thing.
Got it. So you can help in that regard. You can possibly bid on silent auction items, or you could donate a silent auction item.
Totally.
Okay.
Totally, yeah.
There's still time to bid. Is there still time to donate an item for this year, or are we talking about next year?
I think if you had an item in mind, we would definitely be able to get it into the event, you know, in the next, you know, we're only about, you know, a couple weeks away now. Mm-hmm. But then again, get in touch. We'll tell you if it's not going to work this year and we'll start mm-hmm. planning it for next year because, you know, like we talked about, as soon as the event ends, we're going to start planning for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have something in mind, I would tell, you know, anybody listening to just get in touch and we'll figure it out.
You know, there's so I know so many people in my life that support MS because of a relative, support this because of a friend. You know, this is an event that we as a community can go out there and say, you know, friends, family, you all know that we're dealing with this and it's a rare disease and it's not as focused on by doctors and researchers. And so we need an event like this to be successful so that there's money that goes into our organization, which ultimately means more patient advocacy and more research and more communication with the doctors and all of the things that we need to happen. So a lot of good can come out of this event. So
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. It's more so an event that can be really fun and really exciting and kind of almost, you know, it's a great avenue to raise money. You know, you bring let your friends know, anybody who has, you know, knows someone that's going through this,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can come to this really fun event, raise money. It all goes back to MitoAction. It all goes to supporting patients and advocacy and education through MitoAction and sending kids to camp. And it's a really fun venue to be able to raise money for a very, you know, deserving cause.
Well, anyone listening is so appreciative already of what MitoAction does during the year. And I thought it was important for a minute for us to stop and really think about where does the money come from that supports the organization? And I know a good percentage of it comes from the donations and money raised through this event. So I wanted everyone to learn about the importance of it and to really think about, you know, obviously, no one wants to be in this situation, but we are so happy that there is MitoAction to kind of connect us and give us support and kind of lead us down the correct path as we're handling our conditions. So I commend you, Jonathan. I know there's so many different ways you could be spending your time, and for you to honor your mom and to help a small group like ours is so incredibly meaningful. So thank you so much for developing this event with your family and for honoring your mom in such a beautiful and meaningful way.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you having me on here to talk about it. Yeah, encourage, you had mentioned, encourage anybody who's interested and wants to learn more to just reach out and get involved. You know, we try to put this event on to raise some money and raise some awareness, and hopefully we can keep doing it here and continue to raise money and awareness through the SKR Derby event.
Yeah. I'm so glad that now I can better understand what the event is and all that goes into it. And really for that, I thank you so much. And thank you for being here. Thank you for taking the time to kind of teach us all. And thank you also to Paul. I know he really wanted to be here and he's a big part of this event as well. So through this episode, I want to thank him.
Yes. Yeah, I appreciate it. I wish Paul was here. He could really give some more, you know, insightful details as well.
Think you painted a very nice picture for all of us.
Well, good. At least I can give some really, good background on the event and, you know, where it's come from, you know, what my mother really, you know, wanted out of the event. And then, you know, the ability to raise money and send kids to camp was just a huge thing for her.
Well, I'm sure she'd be so proud.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you for being here. And ways for you to get involved will be in the show notes of this episode. So look for some links there to be able to learn more and find out how to donate and be able to send it to your friends and family. So thank you, Jonathan. And we'll look forward to hearing about how the event went and plans for next year as well. So we'll stay in touch with you.
That sounds great. I appreciate it, Marcy.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I am so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.